We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Okay, if we're giving random shout-outs to Chicago radio shows, Parkins and Spiegel, obviously the best.
Afternoons on the Score.
DeRozan, still working. Pump fake, flips it up.
Kobe. I know he's yelling in his head. James Harden is somewhere in Brooklyn right now.
Help me out here.
Can I get that call? Steph Curry the other night got a technical against the Clippers because he didn't get that call. So there's some guys probably sitting at home right now going, DeMar DeRozan gets that call every game.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Bulls win in the hot ball versus ball matchup with LeVar there watching. It was Nikola Vucevic who stole the show. Let's talk about that and more with friend of the show, Adam Amin, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. You watch and hear Adam on NBC Sports Chicago. That was a fun one last night. There's the big three, right, Adam? There's the big three all showing up, all scoring, all looking comfortable. That was exciting to watch, wasn't it?
What do you know? They can all put together 70-plus points on any given night against, now granted, against a team that has a lot to learn and execute on the defensive end. In Charlotte, we know they're a high-paced team that gives up a lot of points. But the Bulls, I feel like, could be at their best when they can play at a higher pace. And I feel like there's been evidence of that all season long. The pace is up. And when the pace is up, other guys are getting involved. Then you don't feel like you have to get LaVine or DeRozan as involved in the offensive sets. You can give Nikola Vucevic 12 shots in the first half. You can get him that many looks and get him comfortable and get him engaged, because when he's engaged, this is a really good team at both ends. He's much more engaged on defense, as a lot of guys often are when they're playing well on the offensive end. And we saw that last night. He was engaged from start to finish because they got him shots early. They got him good looks. I know Charlotte tried to counter with Nick Richards, who's not a starter and has a little bit of size without Mason Plumlee. They went smaller with P.J. Washington, and Vucevic took advantage of matchups. Any given night, Spiegs, I feel like there's going to be one matchup that the Bulls have to find, you have to exploit. And I thought it was the perfect time, whether it was a concerted effort, which I do feel like it was, or not, you have to find the one exploitative matchup. And I think last night it was Vucevic's turn, and it proves further that everybody can be engaged and everybody can get their opportunities and everybody can get their shots on any given night.
I think it was a concerted effort. Billy Donovan basically said he needed to do it after the Heat game on Saturday night. And then there they did. But as you say, all three of them going 12 of 15 for 29 points in the third quarter for just those three guys. You know, outscoring the Hornets alone, essentially, in the quarter. Just those three guys. You and Stacey, and it's such a great broadcast, mixing in some of the X's and O's and the fun and everything. We're talking about some of the slipping of screens that was going on last night. But what looked different in terms of Vooch's usage, if anything, on the floor? Because he can obviously play as a guy who faces the basket. He can play as a guy who has his back to the basket in the post. He can hit threes. What looked different last night, if anything, about his usage?
Well, first and foremost, he made the shots, right? And that's something that we've been waiting on. This is a guy who's been a very good for his size three-point shooter in his career. And obviously we saw that in a good chunk of the season with the Bulls last year. He was not good to start this season. He just hasn't been shooting well for the first 15, 20 games. And when shots go down, that opens opportunities up. I think we've seen a lot of those pick-and-pop, pick-and-flash actions where you get Vucevic either in a mid-range spot or you get him at the top of the key, which is his favorite spot for three. Those are the spots that he likes to be at on the floor for jump shots. And obviously, if he can move in the interior, all the better. I think the Bulls, for the most part, early in games, first halves of games, have tried to get him those looks. And most days, at least at the beginning of the season, at the outset of this year, those shots have not gone down. When they go down early, you knock down one or two, he feels good. He feels better. So then you feel like you can use those actions later in a game to either play that same action and try to get another look at the top of the key or from the angle from 17, or you can do an adjunct action off of that and use a pick and dive or use a pick and roll action or let him slip a screen. And the way he did with Lonzo, when Lonzo drove baseline and Vucevic kind of flared off when the defense was drawn in, he gets more opportunities like that when he's able to make shots early in the game, whether it's mid-range or from 3 points. So I think that was the biggest difference, and that's why you were able to see some of the other actions as the game went on. We talk about a running game, right? And I've got the Bears on Sunday, and I'm sure it'll be a topic of conversation for Mark Schlereth to discuss the Bears' running attack. But I feel like when you run the football effectively in the first half of a game, whether you only get 2 yards a carry, 3 yards a carry, or whatever, you're still setting things up for later in the game to be able to build a play action game, a pass game, an intermediate throwing game, whatever it may be. You're setting things up for later. But you still have to execute early to be able to set things up for later. And when the Bulls are able to execute early with Vucevic, that allows them to expand their usage of him into different actions in the second half of the game.
Adam Amin doing the Bears. What game did you have? I heard you on my Red Zone. Was it Atlanta-Jacksonville? Is that where you were?
We had Eagles-Giants this past week.
Oh, okay. Eagles-Giants. That's a better caliber of game.
Well, you say that. Just say that, but is it? No, I'm kidding. At least it was competitive and it went out of the way.
Hey, do you mind if I ask you? I'm fascinated by this, like the depth chart and the game assignments. I want to get back to the Bulls, but as long as you took us there, like I've always been sort of shed some light on that world, like how that goes. Like, you know, do they literally like assign crews in order to the games that they think are going to have the most viewers? How does that work, Adam?
If I had to boil it down, I wouldn't put, you know, I wouldn't pretend to know what my bosses think or how it works exactly, but just in general television experience, I do think that's generally the case.
Okay.
I think, yeah, if you want to call us the number three crew, we're the number three crew. If you want to call us the number four crew, we're the number four crew. If you think we're the worst crew in the history of football broadcasting, we're the worst crew in history of broadcasting. Any of those you think are right, but essentially we're the number three crew when it comes to getting a crack at, you know, whatever the third best available game is. Part of that is some weeks you have a doubleheader on Fox. Some weeks you have a doubleheader on CBS. When you have the doubleheader on Fox, that means Joe Buck and his crew, the A crew, are doing a game on Sunday. Kevin Burkhardt and his crew are doing a game. And then our crew is doing a game as well. And it's kind of in the sense of, all right, where's the audience going to be? What's the importance of the game? And which crews are working.
Okay.
That's a general idea.
All right. Well, so first of all, salute to General Idea, who is an officer held in very high regard.
Major lessons. You know, he's very important as well.
Yes.
You know, very important to that hierarchy.
Right.
Yes.
Private practice is underneath.
Yes, exactly.
Underneath that guy. and now I want to look at the schedule and see if I think Bears Cardinals really qualifies as the third best game on Fox. I don't know. I'll have to look at that. But I'll nerd out about that later. What is as you've watched these Bulls, you get a unique opportunity to see during the breaks and as they, you know, meet with the coaches, talk to the coaches. They've been dealing with a weird and bad loss in Houston, a beatdown at home from Indiana. Do you notice anything different in their energy or their body language during or after those kind of uglier performances? Because we haven't seen those really until this past week. Haven't seen anything like it until this past week. And that stuff's going to happen in a regular season.
Yeah, and I think what DeRozan said the other day after the loss to Miami, which ended, you know, the week of kind of bad losses. I'm not saying the Miami loss was bad, but the Indiana loss, the Houston loss in particular, I think he summed it up pretty well. He goes, it was a bad week. It was a bad week, and those things are going to happen. And you said it too, Speaks. And I know it's not the salve and the balm that a Bulls fan is going to want to use because they want answers. They want to go, well, why did you guys play this poorly? What's your energy? There's a lot of different factors to it. I think just from in a less than astute observer, I think for me, I think is how I would describe myself. I'm not going to try to play, you know, armchair psychologist about every player on the team, but I do get the sense that there was a lack of energy over the course of the last let's call it 8 days. I think, honestly, and this is an, maybe this is an excuse, maybe it's not. I'm just trying to observe it. It did feel like the grueling West Coast trip, as well as they played for the most part, even through the loss against Portland that they should have had, they played very well on the West Coast. And when you get settled in, that first game against Golden State wasn't good. When you get settled into the time zone, the body clock, all that stuff, I do think they got into a very good rhythm. And then they came back and had to play, you know, the tough game against the Knicks, and they were able to deliver it. I think they were spent. I think they had exhausted so much of what had made them good, the pace, the high-octane defensive efforts that led to a lot of points on the offensive end in transition. I don't think they had the legs. I think they were out of gas. And getting a chance to be at home for a couple of days, you're going to travel to the East Coast now and be at the same place for, you know, 4 or 5 days, whatever it is, against the Knicks and the Nets, I think you should see, or at least expect to see, an energy level that fits the caliber of team that we expect to be out on the floor every night.
Has Zach LaVine adjusted better to the wrist injury, or is it healing? Maybe it's just dribbling less. I notice it less. He's such a silky smooth player. But it was noticeable there for a few games. Do you feel like you notice it less at this point?
I think it's I do, actually, and I agree with both things that you said, Speaks. I think it is a factor of healing. He's been going through warm-ups without the wrist tape, and the, you know, the ligament has been improving. They talked about it too. It was strictly a matter of pain tolerance, because as long as he doesn't hit it really hard, or it gets into another situation where, you know, a guy is, you know, hooking him or whatever it may be, and that thumb or that hand gets contorted in a way that he doesn't want it, it's strictly a matter of pain tolerance, and it should heal gradually. He's been going through warm-ups without the tape on his hand. He is dribbling less. And I think that's another factor for this team, Spiegs, is the ball movement. I mean, when does this team struggle? It's when they get stagnant. And I know that's a lot of teams offensively in the NBA, but this is a team that's so athletic that their small ball lineup a lot of nights, and Stacey's talked about it on the air, their small ball lineup a lot of nights is going to be just frankly more talented than the other small ball lineup. That doesn't mean they're going to win every game with that lineup, or that the other team is going to have a great night with their lineup. But I think just talent across the board, there aren't that many small ball lineups that can factor up with the Bulls athletically and scoring wise. And when they're moving, when they're cutting, you know, you saw with Caruso kind of being one of the few guys the other night that was doing it in big spots against Miami. Last night, everybody was moving. Everybody was cutting. Everybody was moving well. There was always an extra pass. There was a lot less dribbling in general. And I think LaVine is kind of a microcosm of that. When the ball is moving, he's not going to be dribbling as much. And I think the combination of that and just the gradual healing process, I think he's getting used to just having a hand at full strength again.
I hadn't thought about Boogie Cousins in a long time, and then there he is, signed by Milwaukee today. And then I thought, damn it, that'd be a pretty nice backup big to have. I wonder if he would have fit into the culture and the mindset. And like, Boogie had a while there where I felt like he was misunderstood, and actually what he and Anthony Davis were doing together in New Orleans was fascinating and really interesting for a while. Such a good player. I wonder if he would have fit. What do you think?
I think so. And that's, again, I have no data to back that up. I have no, you know, association with Boogie to be like, oh yeah, Boogie's personality based on my personal and close interactions with him would fit great. I just feel like what he brings at the price that he probably would demand, which would probably be a very low price relative to a lot of other guys that are out there, I felt like it was worth kicking the tires on at worst. And I'm sure a lot of teams have thought that about Boogie Cousins, and it hasn't always worked out. But I felt like for what this particular roster needs right now, that would have been a good move. Now, that being said, there's a long way to go before the trade deadline. There's a long way to go in terms of looking at free agents and signing guys and trying to figure out who else can work on this particular roster. So I don't want to, like, give up hope that, well, they're clearly not interested in going after a backup big. I don't think that's the case. But this has been, for the most part, a good evaluating front office. So I'd like to think that they do have a second plan or a plan B. If Boogie was your plan A, I'd like to think they have a plan B in mind somewhere down the line. But I would have liked to see it, Speak.
Yeah, me too, man. And it would have been entertaining. Oh, that dude is
nothing else, man. Yes. There's nothing else. This group has been, if nothing else, very entertaining, and that would have added a little bit of intrigue to it. And obviously the Lonzo, you know, New Orleans connectivity with Boogie, that would have been interesting too.
Yeah, it's true. A couple more minutes with Adam Amin, Bulls play-by-play man for NBC Sports Chicago, among other gigs. What is your take on the Coby White and IO usage? Can they exist together? It's sometimes they have, sometimes they've been staggered. How's that all going to go at this point?
I mean, doesn't it feel like one of those play it by ear night in and night out type of things, which is not fun. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to have to evaluate the first 6 minutes of each guy's night every night and go, well, you're going to play the third quarter. You're getting like players don't want to deal with that. Obviously they don't want to have to navigate through a situation where their playing time is going to be dictated by the first 6 minutes they play because guys press at that point. But I think that might end up being the case because you don't know consistently right now what you're getting out of Coby on an offensive basis. Now, I will say this. I thought that the other night against Orlando, he was so engaged on the defensive end, and maybe IO being out there and playing bigger minutes and playing a bigger role, maybe that was enough for Coby to go, you know what? I'm not playing well offensively right now, even though I know he's got the capability, as he proved the other night. He's just not playing consistently. And maybe knowing that, seeing IO play the minutes that he's playing, playing the defense that IO is asked to play against some pretty good competition from second units and sometimes first units, maybe that was enough to say, I've got to be more engaged on the defensive end. And that's always a positive. So, yeah, you can get minutes on this team by playing defense. And I think maybe that was the switch flip for Coby White. Maybe that'll be the case going forward. But right now, I wish it weren't the case, but it feels like you're going to have to evaluate night in, night out and see, all right, well, which one of these guys is feeling it? Is one of these guys feeling it offensively, or which one of these guys is engaged on the defensive end? Because that's why I need to play in, you know, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes in a couple different quarters a night.
We're seeing the inspiration of teammate style all over the roster, so that's completely in play. Hell, we've seen it with Zach, who's giving you more defensively and moving the ball like Lonzo. You know, it's a beautiful thing. These are young men still with the adaptability and the ability to improve. All right, last thing, Adam, and this is, you know, very personal. I want to hang out with Mo Cheeks. I loved that dude as a kid. Such a smooth, great point guard game with Dr. J and the Sixers. And then the famous moment where he helps the little girl finish the anthem when he was the coach in Portland. He's one of those guys I've never met, but who I just assume is a gem. Have you interacted with Mo Cheeks at all here with the Bulls?
Anytime I get a hand on the shoulder from Mo, it's just like you feel at ease. You feel calm. He's a good man. He says hello on the plane. Gives you a little fist bump, puts his hand on your shoulder.
Ugh.
And he's just you talked about steady presences, right? Like, this is a team mostly made of young guys. You know, obviously DeRozan's been around a long time, and Vucevic is a veteran, certainly, but they're still young people who are still seeking that pinnacle of their careers. You know, Caruso's the only guy on this team with the title. So these are I don't want to say easily influenced by any means. These are men in their own right, but I think Mo has a lot of influence on how they go about the day-to-day operations of being a good NBA team. And that's something that's a lot of these guys just haven't been used to on a consistent basis. And that presence is very important. He's played in some of the biggest games that you'll remember in the 1980s. Those Celtics Sixers rivalry playoff games.
Yep.
He was a key part. I mean, he has played in some of the toughest environments, some of the most difficult atmospheres against some of the toughest dudes that have played this game in the last 50 years. And to have that on your bench is just, it's an invaluable thing. And then just alone the presence, you know, when he sees you, gives you a hello, you feel like you have his respect or something along that line. And it makes you feel better.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the fun things about getting older and seeing these guys evolve into coaches. That was his vibe as a player. Like that Sixers team was with Dr. J was obviously crazy talented, but Andrew Toney was a volatile scorer, and they had all these, and he was just calm as hell and ran the whole show. So same guy as he moves on. All right, Adam Amin, a pleasure, buddy. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Enjoy the call on the Bears and the Cardinals this Sunday, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Speaks. Thanks, buddy.
You got it. That's Adam Amin joining us right here on 670 The Score. All right, a lot to do. Later in the hour, a reminder of why Brian Kelly is a bad guy. But we need to talk about the Cubs signing and Man, you people, you need some context on Clint Frazier. And I want to offer you multi-level context because the Cubs just signed him to a one-year, I believe a non-guaranteed deal. But either way, they signed Clint Frazier to a one-year deal. And this is a very interesting person on lots of levels. We will discuss next right here on Parkins and Spiegel on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.